Yo, welcome to my first case podcast. It's your boy Rob Pimpton with your famous co-host Keisha. So she's going to introduce our guest for the day.
So today we have a true special guest who's near and dear to me, my little sister Jazz. I'm so honored to have her on the show and to come and tell her story on how she caught her first case. So Jazz, how are you?
I'm okay. Can't complain today.
Good.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. So, we're just going to jump right into it. Tell us, how did you catch your first case?
Well, busting them checks.
Oh,
yeah, I mean, that's what they called it. I was just trying to get some quick cash, fast, easy. Easy money. That's what I called it, easy money. But I was with a group of girls, and one of them was messing with some guy. I never even seen the dude. Never seen them, never met him. He was messing with some guy who was supposed to be making checks, printing them up, rolling them out. And for some odd reason, they was working. They was going through. Yeah, they said he had the check machine, ID machine, because he'd make you the whole thing, the ID and the check.
We talking like a payroll check?
Like, yeah, he was getting, what he was doing was getting real checks and duplicated them. Like, people who had real jobs. Like, he was, like, checks from, like, the post office. Checks from, like, big check payouts. Income tax checks. And he was just duplicating them. But he had a check machine. I don't know how he was doing it. I never seen that in play. I just know these checks was coming back, and they was coming back clear, and they was getting cash with no problem. Just so happened it fell back on me.
So how long ago was this?
It had to have been, I want to say 2009. Wait, I graduated in 06. So it had to have been like 2009. Maybe, yeah, 2009.
So typically, on here we have people, because, you know, we do deal with prison reform. So typically what we have on here are people who were sentenced. But in your case, it's like when you got caught, it was sort of like a sentence because you didn't go, per se, down the road, or you wasn't sentenced to any time. Am I correct?
Correct.
So... but it was a sentence for you just being caught.
Just
right?
Being caught, yep.
Okay. Tell us how you got caught.
This particular day, we was headed out to cash checks. It was a car full of females, probably about four or five of us. Each of us had a check. And we went to Walmart, and on some center road. No, take it back. No, yeah, we did go to Walmart on Simon Center Road. And two of the girls cashed their checks in there and went through. So we rolled to the Walmart, I want to say in Brook Park. Yeah, that was Brook Park. We rolled to the Walmart out there. And I went in. No, I didn't go in. Somebody else went in. They went in. It didn't work. So we left there and went to the Walmart in North Olmsted.
So, excuse me. When you said that didn't work, do they just say this check is declined?
It's declined. Yeah, it wouldn't let them. It was just saying like, it just say decline. Like, it don't get, they give you a printout. Like, when it declined, they give you like a receipt looking paper and tell you to call this 1-800 number and see what's going on. and you just go about your business.
In that game, is that a red flag or how?
It's normal, just because. Well, from my knowledge, from him doing it for so long, like some of them will get flagged, but just because it didn't go through at this store, it might go through at a different location, which it did. Because once we went to the Walmart out in North Olmsted, the same chick that tried to cash hers at the Walmart in Brook Park, hers went through. But mine's didn't. She went before me. Mine's didn't go. So when mine's didn't go, we went back to the Walmart in Brook Park. Because I never tried to cash mine at Brook Park. So he wanted me to try to cash it at Brook Park. So we went back to Brook Park. And the whole time, this guy's on the phone. So he hearing and he's seeing what's going on. When you at the register, even when you in the process of cashing the check, he on the phone. Like, even if you don't got your phone up to your ear, he holding the phone. Like, he on the phone. Like, even if you holding the phone down, like, he want to be on the phone so he can hear what's going on. So when I went back to that one to cash mine, the cashier, she takes the check and she takes my ID. And she's like, I got to step to the back and grab the money because I don't have enough money in my till to cash this check. I can't remember how much the check was for. I can't remember how much it was for, but when she did that, now that's a red flag. Anytime they take the check and walk away, you just want to get out of there. So that's what I did. I got out of there. I left. So when she grabbed the check, when she walked off, I walked off. Walked back to the car. When I got back to the car, the people that I was with ain't in the car. So they in the store still. The driver in the store. So I'm sitting in the car waiting. It was another car that was following us. One of them, they was in the store too, but they wasn't with us. Everybody was like, he just had a whole bunch of checks out there, just random people just cashing checks. They was in there in the store too, in the process of cashing their checks too. And they said the lady came back out and was supposed to be like, where'd she go? She go, I got her money, woo-woo this and woo-woo that. So they came back outside in the car to get me. So when they came back outside the car, I'm like, no, I ain't going back in there. By this time, police are already pulling up. So when the police pulled up, they outside, they see what car I'm in already. So they come get me out the car, walk me back inside. And lady like, yeah, that's her. Take me to the back. I was scared as shit. My first case ever. Mama at home finna be, I was more so scared of my mother. Than the police. Like, it was like, man, I done fucked up. Like, I done messed up.
Were you an adult?
I was. Okay. I was maybe 19, 20, maybe.
So you were fresh.
Yeah, I was like 19, 20.
So this guy, he kind of had a little thing, a little rhythm, like, so did y'all have, like, routes of different places y'all would go to, like, or was it just like, we'll just try to bust this check here?
With me, when it happened with me, I had stopped doing it, because I had been doing it years prior to that, but never got caught. And I had stopped for, like, 2 or 3 years, and just random time, like, times was hard, and I'm like, so I didn't really understand if he was still operating the same way that how we was operating back when I was doing it. But for me, it was just like, it was quick. The girls that I was with, I didn't know. So it was like, I would have never went with them for real. Like, if it was me doing it back in the day, just because I didn't know them. I don't know y'all get up. I don't know how y'all roll. I don't know who y'all is, what y'all might do. You know what I'm saying? So it was just like, for me, it was quick cash at the time. And I was just like, shit, I need it. Let me just hop in. Like, it was just random people just picking you up. You know, so it's like, I never seen them. I never know what he looked like. He know what you look like because he got a copy of your ID. You know, he know all your information because he got a copy of your ID. So it was just like, damn.
So this was like some type of ghost guy?
Yeah, yeah.
But you said he was always on the phone, so he was guiding.
He was always on the, directing you, yes.
Oh.
Yep. Yeah, always on the phone. Like, anytime somebody, because he have is one after another. So one person to be, it'd probably be like four of us. So one person be in line, they'll let like a random person, just like a customer, a real customer. And then it's the next person. And then it's, you know, so once that person hang up, he automatically on the phone with the next person, you know. So it was just like, he knew what was getting cash, what was not getting cash. And he was just, yeah, he was ghost. And I never, and still to this day, I can't even tell you what it looked like.
Okay. So like when y'all was doing it, what was the play? Was y'all like getting a percentage of the check? Or
yeah, you'll get a percentage. It was half.
Okay.
So whatever the check was, it was half. But there's been times where he'd tell you, oh, it's going to be this amount. And then when you get it in hand, it's a total, whole different total, another amount. And that was one of my cases that I had. Like, it was supposed to have been like under $500. And when it got to my hand, it was more than that. You know, it was probably like $1,200 or $1,300.
The actual check?
Yeah.
And the amount mattered?
It did, because if you got caught anything under $500, it wasn't a felony. Mm-hmm. Anything over $499 is a felony. Mm-hmm. So that was something that back in the days when I was doing it with them, that was something that we played with. Like, it was nothing, never under $499. And just in case if you get caught, it's not a felony. It's just a misdemeanor. So it was, I guess it was the matter of you having to do so many of them to get to reach that goal that you're trying to get to, or however much money you're trying to make in that day. Like doing a $500 check, you got to do a good 10 of them because you're breaking it halfway. So, but I guess they started getting greedy. Some of them was going through, some of them wasn't. So they was doing them for $1,200, $1,300, but he wasn't telling you. He'd get you comfortable and let you know, oh, yeah, it's going to be $475. And if you get the check in hand, it's like $1,320. You was like, what? But that, and you just go with it just because it's already there. You might as well just, you thinking more money too, though. That's how I thought about it. He was busting them checks.
So when you got to that car and you already was like, "Where shook?" So was you mad that they wasn't there?
Hell yeah! Because if it was me back in the day, it automatically we ghost, we gone.
Yeah,
we gone. And what he did, when he took our IDs, he switched the address and the numbers and stuff on it. So when they did keep the ID. I mean, they probably got a picture of us. We ain't in the system. You know what I'm saying? So it's going to take a minute for them to get to us.
Right.
So he knew what he was doing because he was in the system for it. So he, you know what I'm saying? He knew what he was doing. He knew how to milk it. And we was young. We just like, shit, we need the money. Let's go.
Naive. So that's what I was going to ask you. Even when you said, oh, I would have been ghost, I would have been gone. I'm thinking, okay, but they have your ID. So now you're saying that the ID wasn't... legitimate, meaning all of your credentials was on it. This was some type of fictitious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. And back then they wasn't. When I was doing them back in like 06, 07, they weren't in swiping IDs. They weren't scanning them. So that's how he was able to. That's how they was able to get them through so much, because they weren't scanning them. Now they scanning them. They scanning them through the check machine, right with the check. Mm-hmm. So it got high risk. At the time I didn't know, cause I ain't did it in so long, but I needed the money. So I'm just like, and that's what they did. She scanned my ID right through the thing. And it was beep, beep, beep.
Was it because you just had to try that check at the other spot, or why did the check get red flagged like that? What do you know?
I mean, I can't particularly say like why would it? I mean, it was fake. It wasn't real. And then the numbers, you know, he was taking other checks, like real checks, and duplicate them. So these numbers on here coming back that these checks is already being cashed. Some of them go through, some of them don't. It depend on what employer you worked for. And then once they start getting hip to what was going on, you know, they was really, I guess, being on it, because he was doing a post office in the Indian state. The India state, that they was the main two that he was in the Brown Stadium. I'm going to say main three, because I got caught with a Brown Stadium check. Hmm.
Did he have any, like, history with one of those businesses? Would you know? You know any background on this guy?
No, no, no background.
So he was like the godfather.
Yeah, I don't. Only thing I know is that he did 15 years in the feds for.
Prior or no?
Prior.
Okay.
So and came back and still doing it.
Getting it off them checks.
Yeah, but not doing it. Doing it himself. He's actually was exploiting you guys to do it.
So he got caught. When I guess the first time when he went, he got caught actually doing it. And then when he came back out, he got a team. And he just was like.
When you caught your, when they got you, so did you just take care of everything at the Walmart as far as being booked in, or did you have to go to the city jail?
I went to city and I went to the county.
So you did time in the county?
I did like a couple of that. No, I didn't do. When I went to the county, I went to court that same morning and they let me out.
So did you spend the night?
Not in the county, but in the city I did.
And what city was that?
Brooklyn. Yeah, Brooklyn.
How was that?
The worst. The worst. I mean, I think I was probably the only inmate in there. Until I got ready to leave that morning, there was somebody coming in. But they, it was lonely. Like, they don't care about you. They leave you in there. I think I had one phone call. The hardest phone call I had to make. I called you. Couldn't even call my own mama because I'm like, oh, no, I'd rather. I called you.
You
want to
elaborate?
No. They took us in and the girl that was driving, she got caught with me. Let me just say that. She got caught too because they seen her on camera. They seen me and us coming in, seen both of us coming in together. Mm-hmm. And then they were trying to figure out who car I was in. So they checked her. She got a misdemeanor because she didn't get caught trying to cash her check, but she had one on her. So she went down to, she got out that same night. Like, she was able to make bail. I couldn't make bail because they wouldn't give me a bail because the check was a lot. Mm-hmm. It was a lot. But I called you. I was scared. I was nervous. At the time, I thought that you was the only person that can get me out of it. I'm like, if I call her, I know she got the money. I know she about to come get me. She ain't about to leave me in here. And it wasn't that was not the case. Like, when I seen them come and had me it was a bag with a yellow suit in, an orange suit in it, I knew it was real. I'm like, yeah, I fucked up. I'm in trouble. Like, the ride there, I was like, man, this ain't about nothing. I'm about to get out. But when I seen them bring me that suit and them flip-flops, I knew it was real. And then my friend, they ain't had one for her. She's sitting right next to me. They ain't had her one. And I'm like, wait, what's going on? Like, wait a minute. And it's like, she going home. Her mama coming to get her.
She was a juvenile?
No, she was older than me, but... And she didn't get caught trying to cash her check. So it was a misdemeanor.
My check was on her.
It was just on her. Like, she didn't get caught trying to cash him. And so it was a misdemeanor. So she was able to get by. But yeah, I'm like, damn, I got to be in here by myself too. I was scared. And I just was thinking about like the movies and the stories that I used to hear about, you know, from my brothers, listening to them stories about being in jail and just looking at watching movies and stuff. I don't know. I was just, my head was just spinning. I was scared. I was nervous. I was in there for like 4 days, the whole weekend. I think I went like on a Thursday and it was a wrap. I had to stay that whole weekend. It was unbearable. Like, don't do it. Only thing you can do is just look at the walls, and there was stuff written on the wall, and you just reading this stuff over and over and over and over and over and over. It's like it's nothing there to do.
What was on the walls?
I mean, people just was like carving their name, and forgive me, God forgive me. Just like, yeah, look, it's just crazy
Jesus
stuff.
Saved,
yeah,
stuff
like
that. Philippians 3:12. I know that feeling. So moving on. So what was the outcome of this case? Did you I mean, I know you didn't do any time per se, but how did it play out in the court system?
They gave me probation. They gave me, they put me in some type of first offender program to where if I didn't mess up for that year, it'd get just cleared straight off my record. Like, I wouldn't have no record at all. Deferment program. I'm not for sure what the name of it was, but yeah, they gave me a year of probation to do that. And I even fucked up then.
What you was doing, smoking weed?
Yeah. Couldn't stop smoking weed. I think it was like my last month. I thought I was cool. Thought I was all clear. And I got some papers in the mail talking about I had a warrant for my arrest. I'm like, what? Call my probation officer. She like, yeah. Yeah, you got a warrant. And I'm like, what I got a warrant for? Like, why I got a warrant? She's like, yeah, your urine was 30 12 times. I'm like, what? She wasn't telling me.
What?
She went. So each time I'm going down there pissing. Yeah, but I'm taking like pills. I'm buying the bottle shit. I'm spending $50 here, $125 there, buying the pills, buying the drinks, thinking it's working because she not telling me. So I'm like, oh shit, the shit working. So I'm every trip, I'm still blowing heavy, not even caring though. Like, I'm like, it's working. Her name is Jones, y'all. She don't play.
So after the violation, what came about that?
I had to go back to court, and a judge gave me another year.
On papers,
but it was real. It was real. Like, my probation officer was inside the Justice Center. If I went pissed dirty that first time, they was gonna walk me straight downstairs. It was just straight going straight to jail and do this whole year. So it got serious. I had to drop pee every 2 weeks. I had to do the meetings every 2 weeks. So it got real with me, and I had to do it though. Like, it was hard, but I had to do it, and it cost the shit to be on my record. So it was just like I messed up.
A lot of people think that probation is easy. They think it's a slap on the wrist, but a lot of people, they would prefer jail time to do probation.
And I never heard that before.
Yeah, so you know what I'm saying. So you came off of this the second stint. Did you stop smoking marijuana?
I did.
You
it
just
was hard.
Flat out,
yep.
Straight out.
Yep. It's because I'm like, they gonna walk me straight across the hallway.
Yeah.
Like, it ain't across the outside, across the street. No, it's right across the hallway. So I was just like, nope, I quit. I stopped. Like, they gave me a second chance. Like, so I stopped.
And the second time, did you have Miss Jones or?
Nope. I had somebody different because she was across the street. Miss Jones was across the street in the Marion building.
But both of them were probation. There wasn't no post release. They were both just probation.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And so you came off of the second stint successfully, and
yeah,
and you got off of probation, and so did you learn from this? Like, you learned from, like, if Ghost was to call you today, like,
hell no, I ain't got no holler for Ghost. I'm get Ghost. I'ma get Ghost. No, I ain't got no holler for you. Nope. It hindered me for a couple years after that though, cause I ain't get straight back up on my feet. Like, it hindered me a couple years because it was a fresh felony, and it's from what I was doing. Ain't nobody want to hire you. Ain't no, I'm talking about, it could be petty jobs, McDonald's. Right? They don't want to hire no thief. They don't want to hire nobody that's stealing, forging, none of that. Because they got me for forgery. That's what they got me for, forgery. And then once they see, like, the nature of it, they're like, oh, no. Nah. Anything got anything to do with money. So I end up working, like, little under-the-table jobs, gas stations, convenience stores, stuff like that. And then I got hip, thanks to my sister, Keisha, put me in connects with a program called Towards Employment. Mm-hmm. Towards Employment. It's a 4-week program. Just 4 weeks. You don't do nothing anyway. Just go and go to that class. But it's like from 8 to 3 And you can't, it's real strict rules. But I did it. I did it because they help you. Like, they helped me get that, they helped me get the felony off my background once I completed it for free. I ain't pay for nothing. Only thing I had to do was show up. They do all the footwork for you. They help you find a job. They got me a job at the Goodwill. Help me get a job at the Goodwill. Once I started working at the Goodwill, I was there for like a year or so. By that time, my felony was old enough to get expunged. So towards employment, they put that work in for me, put the paperwork, filed the paperwork, and let me get it. I went to court like maybe 3 months after they filed, and they cleared it off my record with no problems. I was in the courtroom less than 5 minutes.
That's what's up. So you're not a felon right now?
I'm not a felon right now.
Keisha, she's a huge endorser of Towards Employment. She speaks highly on it, and you know, that's good that she did that for you. So that's what's up, you know what I'm saying? So congratulations, you know what I'm saying?
Thank you.
Parole, probation, all of that, you know, turning your life around, looking to do more positive stuff. Shout out to Towards Employment. Shout out to having family that are, you know what I'm saying, you can call from, you know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
that you can call and that's going to help you. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, you know, gotta shout her out, you know, being an emphasis on that note, you know. So, we was pre-gaming before the episode, and I just wanted to, you know, you said you visited someone in jail before. Is that demoralizing? Because I was in prison, and a lot of people, they don't want to come visit you because of certain restrictions, like they'll take your cell phone, or if you can't have wires in your bra, or you know what I'm saying? It's like a headache to, you know, visit someone in prison. So would you say the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's a headache, but I mean,
is it worth going to see? I mean, can it be like sometimes, can it hinder a relationship to the point like, man, I don't feel like going to take my shoes off, or, you know, on this day, or I don't feel like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but it's just, it's not a repeat, it can't be a repeated thing. Like, I'm not going to keep doing this. Like, your first trip, okay, I understand that. But your second trip, that's on you. Like, it's not finna be a repeated thing, because not only it takes time, like, it can get overwhelming, like, especially if it's something that you're doing every month or every other month. Like, that take time, and that take money, and you gotta have that in order to get that. You just looking like, if I ain't working at the time, this is like, well, damn, if you was the provider, like, what I supposed to do right now?
Right. Mm-hmm. I think part of the problem of the deterrence of what prevents people from visiting people in prison, especially here in Ohio, is most of our prisons are far away from where the actual crime was committed, where the person lives at, where their social support and their family is. So distance, lack of transportation, is a huge barrier to prevent people from going to see their loved ones. I think that's one minor thing that actually could help reduce recidivism on a certain level, because it's that support system. If you had that support system there, knowing that your family's here, knowing that, you know, you may get a couple dollars for this or a couple dollars for that, knowing that you have somebody that will be there, that will stand up for you, because I don't know, I've never been in prison, but I can imagine that it's probably very dark and depressing.
Very, very.
And having family, having that support helps you, gives you a reason to keep going. At least that's what I think. That would be my perception. So, Rob, can you speak to that?
Of course, yeah. I was just going to say, I had a little job. Like, so what are you saying? Should they build the prisons closer to the city? I get it. I totally get it. I'm messing with you. But my thing is, I totally understand that, because when I was in prison, you know, I'm going to break it down like this. When I was in prison in Youngstown, Ohio, you know, all the Youngstown dudes, they had everything we needed, because they was getting all the visits. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they had it sort of on lock. You know, if you were smoking marijuana, the Youngstown guys had it, because they in their backyard. They could have one of their dudes come down and toss something over the fence right quick, and they, you know, they had it. or they female friends could bring them whatever they want, you know what I'm saying? But they was getting the majority of the visits and the moral support, you know what I'm saying? So because they were in their backyard, it was like 5 minutes away from their home, mm-hmm. So they got a lot of visits, you know what I'm saying? And you would, like, when I did get visits, I would see the same people out there. That was because of the proximity, like you're saying. So what you're saying, that's valid, and it holds a lot of weight, you know what I'm saying? And it's very meaningful.
And then if you think about it, a lot of our family didn't have transportation valid. I remember at one point in time, wasn't there some kind of buses or something that people could take?
Mm-hmm.
But in general, you have to have some type of support in order to survive in any dire situation that you may be in. And I would think that prison, being isolated, would be dire. Plus, you don't have the ability to control your own destiny. You know?
Just like with the visit, it's so bittersweet because, say, if this was a visit, we talking, we building, like, you know, this is how a visit can go. But the thing about it is, y'all going out there, I'm going back in there. So it's bittersweet, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm feeling it, but they like, you know, Pimpton, you got 10 minutes left on your visit. You start to wear on you, like, damn, they got to go that way. You know what I'm saying? So it's like a gift and a curse. You know what I'm saying? You got to strip out and make sure, you know what I'm saying? They walking straight out the door, clothes, you know what I'm saying? You can look at them getting in the car. You about to go back to your cell. You know, so it's very bittersweet visiting someone or having someone come visit you in jail because of, you know, you can't, you know, like I've seen people, kids like, no, daddy, come with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Come with us, daddy. And it's, you know,
yep. It's
real to that effect. You know what I'm saying? They be playing with the baby, all this and that. You know what I'm saying? And they, you know, but when it's time to go back to that cell, it's time to go back to that cell.
That's really sad, too. I can imagine a child wanting their dad to come with them and they can't. Like, that's really sad. That would break my heart.
Yeah.
Or think about moms, women who incarcerated, who have children, they come visit them. It's a certain type of bond that you have with your child, and to not be able to hold that child and have to part with them and can't do nothing about it. Like, your job, as a mom, you always want to reduce the level of pain or anxiety or whatever that your child has. You never want to see your child hurt. You never want to see your child cry. You don't. It's just something that's maternal. I don't know what it is, but I just cannot imagine not being able to comfort my child because I got to go back in here. You know, I can't take the pain. There's nothing that I can do about not being able to go home with my child. So blessings to all the women out there that are incarcerated. May you have strength and courage in whatever you're doing and whatever your time is. Let it be short.
Yes, yes. Jazz, we'd like to thank you for sharing your story on my first case. We
no
want to
problem.
Congratulate you for getting the felony off your record, for continually being positive out here, and we continue blessings. Thanks for being here. Excuse me. If you want to wrap it up.
I do. I think it's important to talk a little bit about where you are now in your life.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Are you where... You know, where are you now?
After
the first case till I don't know how many years it's been since that case. Where are you now? Are you in a comfortable place in your life?
I am. I am in a comfortable place. I've been stable now for a good 2 years now. Comfortable with the job I have. Amazing company I work for. You know, been promoted 2 or 3 times since I've been there.
Congratulations.
And that's without that felony. As soon as I got that felony cleared off, I think it was 6 months after. Because I think it take a couple of months, like once they go through the system to get cleared off, take a couple of months. So I applied. I waited a year before. Matter of fact, yeah, I waited a year after I got it expunged. And then I applied for the company I work for. And been with them ever since.
You want to tell a story about the day you got the interview to go?
Oh man!
To this company.
I almost didn't have this job, y'all. I ain't gonna lie. I got the interview. It's like a 3 interview process. I got the 3rd interview. I made it. They called me. I'm like, yeah, you got orientation out in Hinckley, Ohio. I'm like, Hinckley? Damn. You know, why so far? But okay, yeah. So I went out that night before. Went out the night before with some, it was one of my homeboys' birthday. Went out and we out drinking. He buying shots and I'm trying to keep up with him, tossing them back. In my head, I know I got to get up and go to this damn interview. So I was driving a 2001 Honda. So look, she was bad too. She hadn't had this car for so long. She'd have been through thick and thin. But in my head, I'm like, my car ain't going to make it to Hinckley, Ohio after I done got drunk now. I'm like, I don't think my car going to make it to Hinckley, Ohio. So I done got so wasted. I wake up the next morning. It was probably about an hour and a half before I had to be there. And my room spinning. I'm throwing up. I called my sister like, you know, I don't think I need that job. My car ain't going to make it out there. I ain't going to be able to drive that far. I'm trying to make up every excuse for her to be on my side, to side with me. And she like, she started going off. I mean, anybody know my sister and how she talk? It's so funny. She got the going off. She was like, are you serious, Jasmine? She like, this is a freaking international opportunity. Are you serious, Jasmine? You better get your ass up. So she's like, I'm on my way. So when she said that, I'm like, oh shit. So I hop up, I jump up, I end up going, but I'm sitting in this orientation from 8 o'clock to 3 o'clock. Anybody know if you got a hangover? Oh my God, the worst feeling ever. Oh my God, I'm in there throwing up. They brought us food. I had to tell them that the food they gave me made me sick. I'm back and forth in the bathroom. It was just real, but I'm glad I did get through. I'm glad I did call her, because if I didn't call her, I would not probably be right here where I'm right now telling y'all this story.
Yes,
she was so serious. Oh my God, Jasmine. This is an international opportunity. I'm like, that drive, it was like a 52 minute drive there. Oh my God, man, they killed me at 7 o'clock in the morning. Oh my God, I was, oh Jesus. Never again, though. That was just for my orientation. Okay. That was just for the orientation, but yeah. But moral of the story is, handle your business first, party later.
That's a great way to end. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and speak with our audience. I'm grateful for you. I'm so glad you are where you are in your life right now. I'm so proud of you. Thankful to be your big sister. Glad you listened. Not just with that, but other things and other ways that I've tried to prevent you from struggling, seeing things, the big picture, and you wasn't able to.
I appreciate that. Appreciate that. Rob Pimpton.
That's what it is.
True-wee.
First case, y'all. We're going to wrap this up. It's in the books. She's going to let you know where you can subscribe to this podcast at. We're going to thank Jazz one more time.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
And, you can go to Anchor website, look up My First Case, and you'll find us there. We out.